Your questions bring you
Phoenix City.
Phoenix City. I'm Frosty and I'm joined by Dave, Ella and Cam just for a return to the old starting four. Patrick possibly is going to join us later depending on his social calendar of being out and about. Hello guys.
out and about. in a very not out and about kind of way.
I think it might be virtually attending an event. Yeah. Chatting with some mates. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I've got to admit, Zoom is good for that, eh? Zoom is good for that. Frosty and I have had a few of those. Well, at least one decent Zoom drinking session on a random Saturday night. So, yeah, I quite like it.
Yeah. Mrs. Frosty enjoyed it.
Mm. It was decent.
I'm being rid of you for now.
No, she was.
Actually, she was on it as well.
It was she was participating half, fully.
A random 3.5 hour conversation, which was quite good.
Oh, nice. Yep. That's good.
Nice. Yep. She went through a bottle of whiskey, but fortunately her local whiskey supplier managed to get online. So crisis was averted. So it's enough chat about the drinking habits of those closest and dearest to us. No football. So Cam went kindly out to the world and said, hey, give us your questions. So I've got a few questions here that we'll run through and just spitball and waste our time and yours, because that's exactly what we need in these troubling times.
This is entirely my COVID-19 lock-in coping technique, is being able to talk to you guys as often as possible.
That is a sad and desperate sign.
Did you mean us or the listeners?
The kids.
Oh, yeah. You make a valid point. The kids motivate us to do other things. Let's just kick it off. With a question from Bevan McCabe. Could we have a New Zealand-based professional competition if international travel doesn't restart? Could it include teams from Auckland, Central, Wellington and South Island? Can I kick it off and say no? Next question.
I mean, I disagree.
I mean, could we unpack the question a bit and maybe just...
Rather than dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, could
this
we
past
do
my
it?
Bedtime.
Yes. But there's absolutely no way it would be useful to anyone or that it would happen. But could we do it? Yes.
What if we brought the A-League to New Zealand? Instead of having a hub in New South Wales, why not have a hub in New Zealand?
Yeah, it's actually probably the best suggestion I've heard, Ella. Let's tackle the three things. Logistics, money, and players. Mm-hmm. Who wants to kick off? Dave, you always want to kick off.
Logistically, it could happen. I think if you look at how the lockdown's going, the numbers are finally starting to look good. There's a reasonable possibility we might be pretty close to eradicating all cases in New Zealand by the time 4-6 weeks of lockdown's over, right? You might be in a position where we've got an eradicated of COVID New Zealand with closed borders. You've got a lot of footballers sitting around not doing a hell of a lot. Logistically, travel within New Zealand and stuff could open back up and you could be playing football. The big problem is the money. I don't see where any money is going to come from to do this in terms of, like, the Phoenix have no onus to try and get their players playing in this. It wouldn't make a lot of sense. New Zealand football, it's not the right time for them to be organising a competition, and they're already going to be distracted trying to get any form of club football off the ground. I mean, there's going to be a lot of club footballers who'd like to be kicking a ball, whether that be in, you know, Central League, the Chatham Cup, like all those kind of tournaments ideally might take place if we're in that position. I don't know why anyone would focus on having a professional competition at the moment. And like you say, something like bringing all the A-League over here and playing it in New Zealand, which is free of COVID, would be fascinating. But again, I don't know why the FFA would want to do that and why they'd want to pay for it. So I think logistically and the will and desire could be there to do it, but there's no way it'll happen because the money doesn't exist.
Hmm. Well, I mean, the FFA do have a motivation to do it. Fox's lawyers chasing them with pitchforks, that's a pretty big motivator. But yep, I just can't see them trying to do that.
They're much more likely to do that in somewhere like Darwin or Townsville than they are to do it in New Zealand.
Assuming they can get rid of COVID there, that's going to be their big problem. If we've got rid of it and we have the closed borders, then it gets a lot more interesting. But I don't think we're going to go, oh, but we'll make an exception to let several hundred footballers in.
Who are renowned for making good quality choices.
I mean, if we keep them away from golf carts, I'm sure we'd be fine.
And pubs and women. And
they can all just ride around on Taylor's jet skis.
Yep.
I mean, it's a great concept, but again, you're looking at doing it when the economy's tanked. New Zealand rugby is going to probably invest what cash they have in reinvigorating the NPC because there'll be nothing else for them to generate income from. And New Zealand, being so interested in rugby, is likely to go, this is all we've got. We will pay attention to it. And so you're going to be competing with something which is effectively a bit of a juggernaut in New Zealand. It's going to have a lot of people behind it. So whilst the concept might be good, it's entirely the wrong time to do it.
The only reason it could work is if you assume the audience is not New Zealand. That you look at the Belarusian professional leagues at the moment and the publicity they're getting could be really, really good for a New Zealand league. That'd be the only reason. If no one else is managing to play any football, you could be like the Belarusian league is at the moment and have some TV deals out of nowhere that realistically that league does not deserve. But why the hell not? There's nothing else going on. So the world's like, sweet, we can watch some football. It could, imagine if it was our national league. That would be crazy. But, you know, it won't happen.
No, it won't. No, it's just the wrong timing, basically. There is really no good timing to have it. It's probably the only time you could even have that conversation where it might have been feasible. But with the economy tanking and there just being no money and no likely new investment, unless you get overseas deals, it's done.
Yep. I think that's pretty much summarised it nicely. Done. Let's kick on to the next and probably one of the more random questions from James Buttery. Not at all a pressing or important issue by any means, but where did the Phoenix City intro outro song come from? I've caught myself humming it scarily frequently. Super catchy. Patrick might be able to correct me on this.
Scatterlights? Yeah, it is the Scatterlights. They are a ska band, one of the more well-known ska bands, but we have a live version of them playing it. We don't hold any copyright to it. So we've just distributed that track 206 times now. This is the 207th time that we've just sent that track out to the world for free. So, and any time we could get a copyright notice from them. But yeah, Phoenix City by the Scatterlights. There's not very good versions, like good recordings of it, but it's a banger.
It's not a bad wee track. It's certainly the best theme song we've ever had.
It's like the track that I use. You get about 40 seconds of it at the start, about 30 seconds of it at the end. But there's like 6 or 7 minutes of just all the other band members doing solos to each other in the middle of there that you just never hear. So yeah, definitely have a listen to it on YouTube if you can.
Yeah, it's definitely the Fat Freddy's drop of older ska.
Yeah, I can't remember what you say, but it's cool. It has been since day one. I don't know if we said it, but it's actually called Phoenix City as well. So the song is called Phoenix City. We were kind of back when we were trying to come up with a name for the podcast, which was really hard. We had just pivoted off our under-20s podcast. We had to come up with a name that wasn't that name because that was very specific to like all whites and youth football. We had to come up with a name for
borderline racist as well.
Borderline racist, yeah. Which is what I was not. That's why I didn't say the name itself. It was a different era.
I mean, it is still our...
It's our Podomatic things.
it's our Podomatic URL. But we're trying to come up with a name for the podcast and we're kind of bouncing a few names around and like trying to come up with like Stripes or Yellow or something and nothing really fit. I can't remember who it was that suggested Phoenix City. But as soon as someone said Phoenix City, I was like, that's the name. And so from that point on, it's been the intro track. So
I would have preferred Black and Yellow and used the Wiz Khalifa song, but no.
I feel like Wiz Khalifa is going to care more about copyright infringement than
definitely would have got that copyright notice by now.
Yeah, within about 20 minutes, I think. Okay, so let's move on and get on to more pressing football matters. Another question coming from Bevan McCabe. Oh, I see. They're all in order. The story behind the alternative stadium at Petone, and could a new stadium still be built? I was living in Petone at the time when this kind of kicked up. I'll push this wee agenda. But the idea was the Wellnicks proposed football facility, not just a stadium, but a training venue and shared use of the grounds and training and that with local rugby, you know, probably the teams like the Wellington Lions rugby team, being as they don't have particularly high numbers going to their games either, you know, certainly not enough to fill the stadium. And there were two places they looked, three places. There was Pōrua, in Lower Hutt, and Petone. Those are the initial ones. Petone was settled on because the facilities there were basically purpose built for it. It would have been, they already had one stand, and they would build, I think, two smaller stands and a whole new thing. And the NIMBYs got out, not in my backyard, and said that it would attract the wrong kind of people and blah, 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 because, you know, we're all hooligans and RBB and et cetera. Do you know anything more about it, Cam?
No, literally nothing at all. I am completely the wrong person to ask about this.
My recollection of it was that the Phoenix initially floated the idea, but then because they wanted to remain apolitical in it all, didn't really force the hand or like kind of champion it any further. And left it to various... Yeah, so they took it to the council, they proposed it to the council, but then once it went into the stages of discussion and talking to the other residents and things like that, there was certainly no vocal presence at those meetings from the Phoenix, and they left it to various community groups who wanted to try and push it through themselves to do so. I know Guy Smith, who hosted in The Zone, was present at a bunch of those and kind of advocated for it, but I hope that I am summarizing this correctly, but he felt that he wasn't getting the level of support that it should from the Phoenix, given that was their idea. And as a result, to those NIMBYs who were saying it's going to cause too much chaos down Jackson Street, blah, 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 were the loud voice at those meetings and caused the council to not move forward with the proposal.
Mm. It wasn't helped by the Wellington Lions, Wellington Rugby Football, being somewhat non-committal. I think they were kind of okay with the idea, but just didn't want to be, I guess, going on football's coattails. I think they want to take more of a dominant position.
I think their bigger problem it was their long-term deal with Westpac Stadium that
it didn't help.
When the stadium was built, they signed a very long-term deal to play their games there. But I think not only the Lions, but the Hurricanes as well would have been interested in playing there. Obviously, your New Zealand derbies, if you will, would have still needed the larger stadium. But if you had a 15,000 seat venue, Hurricanes games for the most part would also fit there quite happily. So it would have been quite a big shift for Wellington Rugby, but that they couldn't kind of openly talk about that with 5 or 10 years still left on their stadium contract. They couldn't be going, yeah, we're planning on getting out of that, because you don't want to burn that bridge.
No,
particularly with council.
The other rumor at the time, and this is completely unsubstantiated rumor, but I can see why people might think this, and I kind of suspect it, that maybe it was a ploy from the Phoenix to try and get a better deal at Westpac Stadium. They had been talking about for a long time.
They spent a lot of money to put that through, though. So
they didn't really spend a whole lot of money. They certainly made
the proposals were pretty fleshed out.
Yeah. Okay. But they were complaining about how much they were paying at Westpac Stadium, like the fact that it cost $10,000 to turn the lights on every single game. That's probably where these rumors came from, Dave.
Yeah, and I think as well, they kind of were in a win-win situation with that. If the stadium had got built, they would have been stoked. Like, if it had actually progressed, win for them because they have a new stadium and they get in a different deal there on better terms, potentially part owning the stadium or whatever, but certainly a better venue more suited to their needs. But even if it didn't go ahead, the rumor of it existing certainly didn't hurt their deal with the stadium, right? It put you in a better negotiating position. So either way, they were kind of winning on that front at the expense of maybe burning a little bit of goodwill amongst a small community. But I think from the outside, most people kind of were a bit annoyed at the NIMBYs. I think everyone recognizes the fact that we need another facility in Wellington. The stadium is not fit for all purposes. I think if we could go back to before we built Westpac, much as I love Westpac in many ways, you'd have to think that a rectangular stadium and more money spent on the Basin Reserve, particularly in light of all the remedial work that's needed doing there and all the problems it's had, that actually that probably would have been better use of the money that did go into the multi-purpose stadium we built.
Problem is that it would have still cost the same to build a rectangular stadium as an oval stadium. So there wouldn't have been a surplus of money that could have gone to the basin. But the stadium also needed New Zealand cricket. The Phoenix didn't exist at this point in time. I think if the Phoenix did exist when the stadium was built, you'd have two major tenants with 25 events a year plus All Blacks games wanting a rectangular stadium versus one game of cricket a year. But it needed New Zealand cricket support at the time. It took 15 years there to sell out a game of cricket, despite the fact that it was built for cricket in a way. So kind of shows you what the market wanted after it was built, but it would have been no stadium versus
potentially. They also had a lot of roadblocks with the Thorndon Residents Society in terms of the restrictions around what we can do with concerts as well. So they're only allowed a certain number of those that go past a certain deadline per year, which really hurts music events coming to Wellington, and is why we don't see a lot of those events coming.
It's
to
also
Wellington,
very expensive for music venues there, for music. Well, gigs.
But it is because they're only allowed a certain number. Yeah. So they price it at a level to kind of ward them off so that only the biggest events can really afford to go there. But there's no reason if the negotiations with residents and whatever when it was being built hadn't gone better for council and they'd got themselves a better position that you wouldn't see it having, you know, almost everything that goes to Western Spring or Spark Arena also doing a Wellington leg. Because so many of those do a Christchurch, but skip Wellington because there's no reasonable venue to justify it.
On the cricket as well, they were supposed to have all cricket at the stadium. So it wasn't just going to be that one game a year when they first built it. It was going to be anything that's at the basin was going to be at the stadium with the assuming there'd be a backup ground in case there was a clash. No, they were going to have tests there as well. Everything was supposed to be there as far as I was aware. That was the idea.
The initial proposal was that Test cricket was going to be there, but there was a lot of backlash about that.
I'm fully in Dave's camp here, where I actually think they should now look at how they can retrofit that to a rectangular stadium, and to improve it now, and just move all cricket out.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you've ever
straight up can't be done, you've got a bowl.
Probably
down.
Right. You're probably right. It probably can't be, but it has to be something. Rather than looking at building a new stadium elsewhere seating 15,000, you have to look at the feasibility of, is it possible to make that a rectangular stadium in any way?
When they've done this, they've done this.
Have you guys been? Have you been to the All Blacks games? They'll often put about 5,000 seats on the pitch side.
Mexico
games.
Peru as well. I had a conversation one night. It was... I was at the stadium and it was the Super Rugby final. I looked across and saw Jane Harman, someone I had a chat to. It was a few years ago now. And I said to him,
Director of Westpac,
CEO of Sky Stadium. And I said to him, honestly, when it's full, the shape is completely irrelevant. It doesn't matter anymore. When that place is full with 35,000 people, the shape is just, it's great for atmosphere. It's fantastic. There's no corners. Nobody has a ship view. It's wonderful. The problem is when you've got 6,000 people in there, that's when it becomes an issue. So it's fine for those 35,000 seat games. So the problem is that there's only one of those a year. And it's when
you don't even need that many, mate. You don't even need that many. The tipping point appears to be like 10 to 12,000. If you get 12,000 people in there, maybe it's 15, but you get those kind of figures. It's actually a good atmosphere. The sound travels and it's an enjoyable place to be.
I disagree with that. I think that there's a major difference between 35,000 and 12,000.
I agree, entirely agree. I'm saying the tipping point for it being, this is just a big cavernous in space, to actually there's a decent number of people in here and they're making a good amount of noise, isn't a full stadium at 35, it's around the 12 plus.
Yeah, I think it feels better once you hit that kind of tipping point of about 12. But the reality is that in a 15 to 20,000 seat stadium, and I think 15 is probably a sweet spot, but you know, a smaller stadium, 12 would feel like that 35,000 atmosphere. And that's what you want. Whereas at Westpac, you have to get that amazing atmosphere, you do need 30 plus. At 12, it's better than when there's 5, when it feels absolutely empty. But imagine if we had a stadium that only held 15,000 people and we were getting 8 to 12 every week. It would feel phenomenal every week. And that's what you want out of it, right? And not only that, but it's cheaper to run. It's, you know, all of that stuff improves because it's just smaller and easier to manage. So, yeah.
I mean, just kick back to the feedback we got, not just from people that went to Hut Rec, but also were watching on TV. And so many Aussies were sending us messages going, wow, the stadium sounds awesome. I mean, they didn't know that the lights were hanging on by one piece of dodgy chain. That was fine.
I mean, so they thought it was humming. Falls, you're fine.
Well, yeah, Patrick was stealing sausage rolls at the time, so it got a bit sketchy there. We would have lost our producer.
The Phoenix, the podcast wasn't running then. It was in the last days of Phoenix City. So this podcast. Last days in the zone. This is the last days of Phoenix City. So maybe you wouldn't have got a podcast at all. So
sorry, if we not announced that this is our farewell episode, did that not make the questions?
This is it. Yeah. Hasn't asked us.
What's the next question, Frosty? Hit us on the new one.
Nice subject change, Pat. From Anna, and oh, this is a biggie. You have hypothesized about an Australian-based Phoenix for next year. How do you actually see this playing out? Without home games, would the fans continue to watch? How could the club ensure that fan participation without any home games? Ellie, you've been quite quiet. I'm going to throw you under this bus.
All righty. I mean, I guess that potentially comes under a bit of a league-wide strategy, right? Like if, say, hypothetically, the Knicks are being based in Sydney or New South Wales, more generally, potentially the league moves to that kind of model. I guess that does kind of ramp up what fandom in the A-League looks like kind of more widely. I guess it does become more social media heavy. It becomes more, there's obviously more onus on, you know, access to Sky, presuming that that's where it would be screened, and there's no reason to not think that that would be the case. It does kind of just rely on existing fans just making more of that effort to watch, I guess. You know, maybe football becomes more of a pub-watching sport, because where else are you going to get that kind of sort of communal thing that you get when you go to the games, right?
I think that the club, if that was the case, would do something outside a pub. Like they would try and take over Pacific Square for every game or something like that.
Yeah, true.
Set up some sort of method for that. But whether we have the ability to congregate in public like that at that point in time is
like there's so many factors that come into it, right?
Yeah, and like the fact that we're talking about like a massive public event is just completely unfathomable at the moment. But I think the club would definitely do something to try and keep it going in Wellington.
Yeah.
But it would require kind of that, they would be leaning on that loyalty that the fan base has, and to kind of support the club from afar. I think it would be different to other conversations about an Australian-based Phoenix previously, because that's all been about moving the club there permanently and then they wouldn't have no home here whatsoever. But I think even if we knew the Phoenix would kind of come back when they could, it would be a little bit easier for us as the supporters to connect with the club.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of feeds into, you know, the conversations that have been had of you know, if there's a W League team, that would probably be initially based in, you know, in Sydney, in New South Wales, you know, at least for the initial couple of years and that kind of thing. So it kind of, you know, feeds into that conversation as well. You know, whether or whatever happens to the W League in the future, we obviously don't really know.
I think you hit on a key thing there, where it's about existing fans and loyalty. I think it would become a season that wasn't about growth for the club, and that wouldn't be anyone's goal. I think it would be not only for the Phoenix, but also for the league. It would be about running a season and staunching the bleeding. Like, you know, you need that TV money coming in. You need to be playing games. You need the clubs to still exist, because going, let's say, a full year without any games being played would kill the clubs and kill the league. Yeah. It would be about finding a way just to keep it running and holding on to as many of the loyal fans as you can. Not about growing anything, not about necessarily finding any way to do that. And so I think that would be the strategy here in Wellington, would be about getting existing fans engaged. And it's going to be hard to do, but I think you would see, as you say, a hell of a lot more social media content. You'd see some sort of fan engagement kind of activations here, whether that be playing the games live, you know, in an outdoor event or a movie theater or whatever. But if you're not allowed to do that, even just having a way to do it in your own home, whether it be, you know, the game's commentated by Piney up on a Zoom meeting and you can see his face and, you know, have people engaging that way, you know, they would find a way to do it. But it wouldn't be about bringing in new fans, because you're just not going to be able to get in front of people's eyeballs and in their kind of brain space when they don't engage with the sport at all. So it's just about minimizing loss and keeping the season alive.
Do you reckon the Phoenix would hire us to run that Zoom meeting coverage?
Absolutely.
I've got some experience now. Yeah.
We can make great commentators, maybe. Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Our commentary of that game was top notch. We didn't spend the whole game going, this football's shit. I didn't remember it being shit.
and we missed Piney's commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not often I say bring back Fred Young, but wow.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
If you're going to spell that stuff, I'm going to rain hosting dues back off you, Frosty.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next question. It's actually, I've got a question of my own. Thoughts about the FFA after the technical director resigned after mere months in the job and put out a 7-page, basically, rebuff to the FFA. Did you guys read any of that?
Yeah, well, because I think we heard rumors.
Rob Sherman?
Rob Sherman, yeah. So, ex-technical director of New Zealand football as well. I heard rumors. Yeah. He was in charge of New Zealand football's technical side when we went through the Olympics stuff and that kind of thing. And he left New Zealand football, I believe, to go to FFA. He quit, and I think we knew this at the time, he quit citing that he couldn't bring together the federations, and he was finding that a massive roadblock, and he's kind of just formalized that this week, saying that everything is being run by multiple people, multiple times, and to get any change going through, you have to convince so many parties, and there's no, like, FFA is the governing body, but it's not a central body, if that makes sense. And he just found that frustrating. So I think that's just a comment on the setup of FFA and the way and the amount of power that the state federations have versus the actual ability to do FFA and that kind of thing. What it's like here with our... they're not federations, are they? What are they? Like Capital Football and Northern Football?
Yeah, they're federations.
Yeah. Yep. It's kind of the
same. It's largely a similar setup here, to be honest.
We just don't have states.
See, I read that, but I kind of reading between the lines. It felt more, or as much about the FFA not doing anything. They just kind of put their hands up and just kind of left it to the states to do their thing and expected it all kind of to gel together, and they would just take care of, you know, the Matildas and the Socceroos and the Olleroos, and everything else would just kind of take care of itself. That kind of felt like a bit of a rebuff that they weren't interested in trying to grow the grassroots of the game. That was just going to be the state or the states to do their stuff. I thought that was kind of interesting. Obviously, I wouldn't have brought it up.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting one, because I like a lot of it from the outside is reasonably apparent. I don't think for a lot of Australian kind of football fans, particularly anyone who's been involved in any sort of admin or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, would have found any of it particularly surprising. But at the same time, it's agreeing, you know, from the outside with a lot of that stuff. You know, the grassroots stuff does seem to be neglected by FFA. That seems almost a no-brainer to me. You look at it and they don't do a huge amount in that space. But equally, he's got some other things that he kind of throws out there as if they're kind of also as blindingly obvious that I find really disagreeable. Like the fact that obviously to fix the A-League, we need to go to a winter season. I'm like, ooh, is that in the same breath as all that other stuff? I'm not so sure, because there are parts of it I'm like, yes, I completely agree. I think there are, you know, a lot of football, you know, even globally, look at FIFA itself, there's too much kind of bureaucracy built into the system that we absolutely could trim and probably have better results. But how you fix that's difficult. But in the same breath, he's also like, and obviously, you know, compete with all of the other winter sports on an equal playing field and we'll win somehow. And I'm kind of like, I don't know that all of that's as obvious or necessarily true. And I find it hard to reconcile his kind of manifesto, if you will, as a whole set of ideas because of that.
Pulling that idea out, moving to a winter season, honestly, the only reason that stands out as being a positive there is player welfare, because obviously it's really tough playing in the conditions they play in. Totally get if you chuck it to a winter season, it's going to be much better for the players' health and safety. Every other metric you're looking at there, they are going to be up against a hiding to nothing against massive sports with huge followings already. The reason they shifted out of the market, that market in the first place, was to try and get a larger market share, having only to go against cricket rather than having to go against all the other sports that they did. So I can't see them ever deciding to shift it that way.
I mean, Big Bash is now a thing that wasn't. So, you know, they now are competing with that as well, which is certainly a decent draw card in terms of Australian television viewership. But I don't know that switching back to winter without a coherent strategy of how that's going to work makes a lot of sense for mine. And I think as a football fan in New Zealand, obviously we're slightly different. But as a person who, you know, used to play and do all my club stuff in winter and have the A-League in the summer, it makes football a year-round activity for me, and that's perfect. If all of my football was condensed into winter, it'd be really hard to kind of do all the stuff I do, I genuinely would have to give up a lot of stuff. And yeah, then my summer would be completely devoid of football, and I wouldn't like that. Like, there are reasons I don't like it as a concept, but
April's already hard enough. April's already hard enough where you've got local football, obviously not at the moment, but local football and the A-League. Because if you're playing a game at like 2:30 in somewhere that's not your home, and there's a Phoenix game on at 5 or 5:30 or 7:30, it makes it all of a sudden very hard to get there. And we already had that period of a month where that was difficult. So turning that into a full season of it, it's only going to cannibalize its own fan base and its own stakeholders from both elements. So the people who won't play grassroots or the people who won't go to the A-League. Yep. So, but I'm going to counter what Cam said again. Sorry, Cam. But the other positive it does do
nothing
is it
lines, wrong with
up,
that, mate.
Lines up with the Asian leagues. So it's not just a player welfare thing, but it lines up with Asia, which has benefits in terms of Asian Champions League. At the moment, if you make it through the group stage, you go into the second stage of the Asian Champions League having done very little of a preseason, whereas most of the other clubs have been playing their whole season. So you're disadvantaged from that perspective. And it also opens up to transfers. It makes transferring Asian players around or getting Asian players into your teams a little bit easier. And given AFC are pushing the 3+1 rule for quite a while, that's probably an upside there.
Yeah, and I think that lines up nicely with what his role was at FFA. You know, he's a technical director. He wasn't a commercial director. And so there are a lot of footballing reasons that it would make sense. There are not necessarily a lot of commercial reasons or fan-based reasons or any of that kind of stuff why it would make sense. And so I think that's why in his mind it's really obvious, but I think that discussion is much harder to actually come to a reasonable conclusion on.
Let's push on to another question and get on to one from Matt Anderson, who wants to know the best way to get involved with the Fever and start out as a newbie. Dave, why don't you run through this as standing... Fever Elite,
yeah, sure. it's a good question because the answer is actually pretty simple but complicated at the same time. Because the reality is, any of us who are involved in the Yellow Fever are only involved just because we did it. You just need to talk to people. You need to offer to help with stuff, and you talk to the right people, and you offer that to the right people, and you will be involved as much as you would like to be. You know, the only reason I'm doing any of this and all of the stuff I've done over the years is exactly that. I just offered to help out with stuff. And suddenly it takes over your life and, you know, you don't have time to do anything else. But if you want to get involved, there are a couple really easy things to do. I mean, there's obviously a lot of people who know, you know, some of the faces around the Fever. So people like Dale or Tracy or me or Pat or, you know, all those kind of various people that you might know, come and say hi to us at something. If you're at the bar or you're at the game, come and introduce yourself and tell us you'd like to help out with some stuff. And I'm sure we'll be happy to point you in the right direction. The other thing you can obviously do is get involved on the forums. That helps a hell of a lot. Be more involved there, offer to help out with stuff. Quite often messages will go up and they're looking for help with things. But equally, feel free to send an email to info@yellowfever.co.nz. If there's something in particular you're really keen to get involved and champion, send an email and suggest that. You know, if you want to start being, you know, the new director of TIFOs in Patrick's absence living in London, because I mean, so many of the great banners that came out, you know, the laser kiwi and stuff is just because Pat wanted to do it and said, hey, who's willing to come down and bring a sewing machine on a Friday night and sew a fern onto a giant whopping bit of fabric? And, you know, that's how that happened. It was not because anyone was driving it or we have any useful, coherent plan. It's just one person deciding to want us to do it and saying, he'll help me. So if you've got something like that that you want to champion, let us know and say, can some people help me with this? And, you know, if we can't help ourselves, we'll absolutely try and find the bodies to help with that sort of stuff.
I mean, I can only talk to how I got involved in the Fever, and I'll give it as an example. But basically when I was younger, over 10 years ago now, I wasn't a day one supporter. I kind of got on the bandwagon when the Knicks made the playoffs that season, but then I stuck around. And I was at the pub before the games, which I know is a thing you can only do if you're 18, which was a problem for me at the time. But started talking to people. There was an event where the Thanks Terry shirt had just come out, and TV3 were doing a thing down at the backbencher with a few of us wearing the Thanks Terry shirt. So I went down there, and there were about 8 of us, and I said hello to the guys. I think I met Newsy that day, and then kind of just got involved like that. Got in the Fever Zone. The Fever Zone is a great way to meet people because you can come in there no matter what age you are. Probably not if you're if you listen to the podcast, you can probably come to the Fever Zone and just come and say hi to people. Like Jake, who plays the drum now, just did that. He came over and said, is it Jake? Is that his name? Jacob?
Yeah. Jacob.
Yep. Jacob. Sorry. We call him Jake, but he corrects people to Jacob quite often.
But he just came over.
He just needs to embrace it.
Yeah, he came over to us and said, hey, I can drum, guys. You want me to drum? And all of a sudden, he was a new drummer. So I was like that. Somebody got me doing FIBA Fridays and running the email list for that, which is we would go, walk down Lambton Quay handing out flyers for the game on the weekend. And so that died a horrid death, but it kind of got me involved in doing stuff. So yeah, get along. It's a bit hard when there's no football on. But when we're back in whatever capacity you're back, just come and say hello and have a chat to us. And that's the way to get involved.
Yeah, and I think the key thing I'll say is that the FIBA are a pretty welcoming bunch. We're very unlikely to turn away offers of help. The people who might suggest that that's a thing, though, are because they, you know, they like, I really want to help with something, but there's not necessarily like us having to come up with ideas of stuff to help with is really hard. We, you know, those of us who are doing stuff often already have a lot on our plates. So your best way to get involved is to have an idea of what you'd like to help with and say, I'd really like to help with something like this, and be willing to kind of, you know, own it a little. Even if you need a little bit of help, people will help you. But if you're just like, generally, I'd like to help, that help will probably just extend to turn up to the pub, spend some money and hang out with us, rather than being able to suddenly be in charge of a thing and make it your own. But if you've got a really clear idea and you know, the drive to do it, people will support you in that 100%.
Frosty did that. Frosty came out to me one day and said, I'd like to help with the Android app, and made my Android app a little less shit.
Absolutely.
That's how Frosty got involved.
Just a little.
And you regret that decision every day since.
Yep. Yep. Every day.
That's a nice segue to the other questions we had, by the way, if you've got that to hand.
Oh, yes.
That question.
Good, cool. Again, from Matt Anderson, probably something that can be answered straight up, but how much does a banner TIFO thing cost? How can we donate, and how do they actually get done? So we've just heard about how Patrick or whoever decides, yep, this is something I think would be fucking funny. And motivates people to go out and do it.
Or spectacular, to be fair.
These banners kind of start out with an idea. They're not always my idea. I think the Laser Kiwi we were tossing around for a little while. A few of us were talking about it. And Dale was the champion of that idea. The Big Phoenix that we did about 5 years ago after the Cricket World Cup, that was my idea. That was the first time we'd done something that big. And the Siggy and Manny one, that was all me. I did the whole thing of that one. That was nobody else. But it kind of starts out, we have an idea and we kind of throw it around amongst ourselves, and then we tend to go and ask for permission to do it before we start. So that involves talking to the club, making sure they're okay with it, and talking to at the stadium. The first one, it was kind of, we had to go and have a whole bunch of health and safety meetings with them. But everybody was super supportive of what we were doing. The stadium even went out and bought some pulleys that they would keep for themselves, and they'd hang over the bars from above. So there's no way we could do any of the stuff we do have been lucky to do without their support. So big shout out to the whole team there. So the personnel there have changed about over the 5 years, but they've always been very supportive. It's about $1,000 all up for one of them. Anywhere between $500 and $800 of material, depending on what we're doing, and then paint. The big thing is time as well. It takes, like that Laser Kiwi, which is like the most complicated thing we've done, took us ages just to get enough black material for the back to cut out the kiwi and sew the kiwi together, to then do the fern. The fern took us ages because it was so intricate. And then the big line, it was kind of four of us spending, it was like four or five evenings in that hall working on that thing together.
The night I was sewing that fern was horrendous. I have traumatic dreams about that still. I didn't even have to do all of it. I think I probably did about half of the sewing on that, and man, it was a nightmare.
Yeah. Currently, we have kind of put things on hold. We basically, me being away and not being as involved has meant that nobody else is really championing that idea. So it goes back to what Dave was saying before. If you want to be the one that takes the lead, let us know. But when we do... we've been lucky in the past to have enough money from our merch sales and things like that to be able to cover most of it from the FIBA's coffers. If we do anything more, FIBA's not in that same financial position at the moment because we're not doing less merch because people have lots of yellow t-shirts by now, apparently.
Although the Patreon is doing really, really well. We've obviously widened that out and it's doing really well. So I would expect by next season, assuming that continues going as well as it is, to be in a position that we actually do have some fun for this kind of stuff, because we've specifically said some of that's going towards TIFOs and stuff, which is really cool.
Anything that isn't covered by the daily running costs of FIBA or the podcast will go towards that kind of thing. We might, and if we need to, ask for donations to help top up or ask more Patreon subscribers, things like that. But the best thing you can do now is support us on Patreon. And if we need a little bit more support, we'll put that call out either on the forums or through our email lists or social media, that kind of thing, when it comes. Was there another question? How much time they take to make? Was that the last part of that question, Frosty?
Why don't you tell us that?
And how do they get done?
Yeah. Where do they live after they've been, is it just like a shed of TIFOs?
Newsy's garage.
Newsy has the Laser Kiwi at the moment. Does New Zealand have it or does Dale have it? I can't remember. One of them has it in their garage. Did we roll the yellow, the laser kiwi out for the football ferns as well? Is that when we?
Yep. Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, there was
ferns.
Another.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember how badly it smelt.
Yeah, because it had been in the garage the whole time. Dotted around my parents' house is a bunch of those faces that we did at Hut Rec. I did a TIFO where it was the 11 faces of the team in formation on the stand. But because there are more than 11 players in a squad and it's hard to tell who would be included on game day.
On day.
I had to make one for every single player in that squad, and I'm glad I did because I think we had some obscure starts on the game day today. Those faces ended up being, I think, some random stolen. People ended up one or two of them stolen. Yeah, I have a bunch of them just kind of laying around here. All those players are gone now, so they're completely worthless to us.
That is not true. There's nothing wrong with celebrating your history. You could still crack them out. They could still crack out a Burnsie when we've celebrated the anniversary of the first hat trick and that kind of stuff.
The first part is sewing them together. So it's really hard to buy fabric that's kind of 10 meters by 15 meters. And if you can, it's really expensive. So they're kind of 1 meter strips that I sew together. That's kind of a little bit of an easy part because it's just a straight line through the sewing machine. As things get bigger and it gets harder to sew, sewing machines are not designed to take massive amounts of material through them, which is why Dave is traumatically talking about the fern. That's the first part. And then either we're going to paint them or sew onto them. If we're painting them, I'll tend to use a projector to project whatever we're going to paint on and trace around, do the whole thing kind of like that. If we're going to sew whatever the thing is on, the only one that we've really sewed together was the laser kiwi. Then we just project it onto the smaller bits of fabric and cut out the kiwi. Then it's a case of sewing them on or painting it. If we're painting it, it requires lots of tarpaulins underneath and a large area to let it dry. If we're sewing, we need a large enough area to move the whole thing around. And that's when we need people. That's that part of the process there. If we're painting, we want to lay the whole thing out, get the whole thing painted as quickly as we can. So that can involve a bunch of people. It's not overly skilled because if you make a little mistake, in the grand scheme of things, people are 100 meters away when they're looking at it. So that's how they get put together. I mean, have I covered everything? Is there any other questions from you guys before we move on?
The other one's probably the letter banner. Which we do reasonably often. We've been a bit lax about that lately. But
you mean the message one that we roll out all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that one is it's a little easier. It's actually skywriting. Like it's basically a giant yellow square we have that we obviously reuse. And the letters are skywriting letters that are designed for being, you know, dragged behind a plane. So they all string together quite nicely. But you have to individually kind of, we use pricing tagging guns to actually attach the letters to the main banner. But that's reasonably time consuming, but to be honest, that one can be done by two people. And so the reason this kind of stuff just falls off is with so much other stuff in people's lives, finding 2 hours for two of us to get together and do that and a space big enough to spread it out and actually do it is not always easy. And so when you've got five people helping, it's half an hour and it's really easy. But when you're trying to fit it in and you've got 2 days until match day and only two people able to help and no space to do it, that's kind of the first thing to drop off because, you know, everyone has lives and other stuff they can be doing. And, you know, once you've done 20 of those banners, it's hard to find the motivation to do the 21st. Helping out with stuff like that is fantastic. So
also if you have an area that's about 20 meters by 20 meters that we can lay a big yellow banner out and put letters on, please let us know because we've run out of all of our locations to do
particularly
it.
Particularly in the evening, because evening is almost always the best time to do that. 7 o'clock at night, if you've got a space that's available at that sort of time with that sort of space, it helps a hell of a lot.
Sorry, Cam, I cut you off.
That's okay. People like Matt, get involved purely because people like us, like me now, when I first got involved with fever, I didn't have any children and had, you know, I could get out and do whatever I liked. But now it's almost impossible. With people like, you know, Smithy, I guess, is another perfect example with two kids and Dale's got a kid. Yeah, the people that we're doing things, life is moving on and they're not able to commit as much as they used to. So these things fall off. If more people like Matt, you say you're interested in coming along, there's a lot of things out there that you can get involved with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true. We've got one more question that we are going to tackle tonight before we wrap up our hour long. It's from Gwyn, who wants to know our thoughts on an A-League Pacific expansion outside New Zealand. Where would you put it?
That's an outstanding question.
I would put it back in the pipe because it's pipe dream. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see this happen. Absolutely love it. But there are so many problems, so many difficulties with the idea. One, the logistics of it. The money, again. I think the quality of players there. if you could amalgamate the quality players from right around the islands into one team, you'd have a pretty decent team.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. If we kind of assume that's happening, I think, and put those logistical problems aside, I think it would be an amalgamation of a bunch of islands. And that has its challenges, obviously. You need to have somewhere to base yourself. Fiji is relatively close to New Zealand.
Probably the biggest with the largest population.
Yeah.
That seems Suvaru and Aotearoa seem the most logical places to put them.
But yeah, you'd have all the same challenges that you'd have putting the Phoenix in Australia, for example, that we talked about earlier, in terms of trying to build up a fan base in somewhere. If you're taking games around the islands, it's going to be very hard. So,
I think your biggest biggest issue with all of that is the FFA and the thought that Australian football as a whole doesn't want to be seen to be supporting or being the lifeblood of Ireland or, you know, oceanic football now that they've left that confederation.
When they left in 2006, the Australian government, I believe, had to make a pledge to support football in the islands as part of them
for
a decade. That's what I was going to ask. If that was still going, it might be different. But Ella?
Yeah, there's certainly been some activity because I know the one of the junior Matildas teams last year, I think would have been maybe August, September time, did a tour through some of the islands. So I think there is still like a bit of work being done there in some kind of like development sort of interest. But what that specifically sort of is part of is in terms of a more political strategy, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, and given
there is, there is some activity.
Yeah, given that the A-League is trying to expand within Australia and struggling to expand within Australia, I don't think they're going to push resource anywhere else, definitely not New Zealand, let alone the islands, I think. So,
The only way I see it happening is if you get an OFC Asia merger and you go to an Asia 1, Asia 2, and the islands, Australia and New Zealand, are all part of an Asia 2, then maybe it happens. But I think feasibly the only way it occurs is a combined Pacific team. Serious backing from the Federation. I think it faces some challenges for sure. The Super Rugby have obviously looked at it in terms of a Pacific team and that as well, and it kind of never really got the legs that it probably should have. And there's a lot more support in rugby for developing the Pacific regions than there is coming out of Australia for supporting Pacific football. So the fact that they can't get it off the ground should tell you the kind of challenges it faces and how difficult it would be, but it would be fantastic. And obviously you'd need to have things similar to what we've got here for the Phoenix in terms of making Pacific players locals for them and all sorts of stuff like that. That'd be really cool and a really massive development step for that island football. But it's a long way off and it requires a lot of stuff to kind of line up just right first. And the Federation, if it's an Asia 2 Federation or something like that, to throw a lot of cash behind helping it.
Yeah. For those of you who are a little bit older, you may remember if you take any interest in rugby, that they even tried an Island 15 for a while at international level. And they couldn't even get that off the ground. So it's really problematic and few people have tried it. Maybe not as wholeheartedly as they should have, but it would be a really good thing for not just football in Oceania, but in New Zealand, Australia, and pretty much everywhere. I think everyone would benefit, but again, the money.
The cultural roots of each of those islands are so strong, I can understand why they would have a large struggle getting the bipartisanship, you know, to get the people. If you've got a team which is, you know, a third Samoan, a third Tongan, a third Fijian, are those guys really going to throw their full wholehearted support behind that? You know, when they're not seeing that identity as supporting themselves necessarily. I can understand entirely why they struggle to get it off the ground. It's as unfortunate that is the only way that I can see as a viable option of improving or having a possible professional club based out of one of the islands. But if you're going to base it in, say, Fiji, even if you've got five or six players from Samoa, Tonga, or New Caledonia, or PNG, or somewhere playing for that side, it's based out of Fiji. It's going to be a Fijian team, and
I think it has to be a team that's based all round. Like, I think it just has to be. I think you've got to lay out that it's going to travel. That home games are not home to one stadium. I think it's got to travel. If you're going to be saying we want players from Fiji and Samoa, and you know whatever, it needs to play in Fiji and Samoa. It has to. And you lay that out really clearly at the start of the season. You know, we're doing four venues with a quarter of our games at each. It makes it logistically difficult for sure in terms of trainings and travel and all of that. But I think it's the only way it works is that unlike the Wellington Phoenix, where it's a Wellington team that travels a bit around New Zealand, this has to be a Pacific team that by default plays around the Pacific.
And I think the reason why
it's not a Fijian team that takes some games elsewhere, because otherwise it would never work.
I mean, you've also got to look at the strength of football in the islands with, you know, Tahiti, PNG, and New Caledonia. They've all, you know, they would all have a good shout for having, you know, a decent number of players, and they'd want to have games in there. And then you've got, you know, Fiji would be the other one. But those, you know, it's not just going to be those four. There's going to be a lot of people there. Yeah, Solomon Islands is a great shout as well. So there's five countries right there who would have a massive shout for having players. So very, very hard to see how it's going to work.
Yeah. I think we've probably reached our time limit now. Sorry if we didn't get to your questions. Some of them look very interesting, but possibly a bit too big. May have needed a dedicated episode, to be quite honest.
Maybe we'll research and do it next week.
Yeah, well, certainly that was what I was thinking. There's a couple there that maybe we could take a stab at for either another episode or a Patreon only of. Just to show some love. As Pat said previously, if you do want to get involved financially, becoming a patron would be great. That helps not only support the pod, but also the forums and Fever in general, because effectively we're all part of that same happy family. If you want to get involved in a more tangible way, when we start up again, coming to the backbencher and making yourself known, or getting on, what was it, info@yellowfever.co.nz, and just putting your hand up for whatever you want to do. Everyone would be really grateful for the help. So we'll leave it there, lads.
Thank you.
Thank you all for doing your Thursday late night pre Good Friday.
Honestly, I have no idea what day of the week it is today. No idea.
It is Thursday.
It is Groundhog Day.
Screwing up the outro again.
Yeah. No, this is good for this is a good outro.
I was going okay there. Thank you very much. You're just being a dick.
Of course.
We'll leave it there. Even Ella's getting in on this.
I believe in you, Frosty. Yeah, you can do it.
You can do it.
We'll give it one last try. You got it.
Shut up. Okay. Ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for talking as well, guys. I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye, Frosty.
That was better.
Archie Thompson's Kiss of Death brings you.
AMAs with the Phoenix City crew bring you.
Speculative Speculation brings you.
Trying to remember how to make a TIFO brings you.
I really fucking hate Paw Patrol brings you.